I have the opinion of the court this morning in case 15-827, Andrew F. versus Douglas County School District. The Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, or the IDEA, offers states federal funds to help in educating children with disabilities. In exchange for the money, a state agrees to comply with a long list of conditions. One of them is that the state must provide a, quote, free appropriate public education, end quote, a FAPE for short, to all eligible children. A FAPE consists of specialized instruction tailored to a child's particular abilities and needs. A school sets out its instructional plan for a particular child in a document called an Individualized Education Program, or IEP. The IEP is crafted through a collaborative process involving teachers, school officials, and the child's parents or guardians. Together, they prepare a comprehensive educational plan that identifies the child's needs and abilities, sets goals for the child, and describes the special services the school will provide to make those goals attainable. Educators and parents often agree about what a child's IEP should contain. But parents sometimes determine that the IEP offered by the school is inadequate. Now, when this happens, the parents may seek relief in court, and the court must determine whether the IEP satisfies the FAPE requirement. 35 years ago, in a case called Rowley, we held that a child's IEP is adequate and the child has received a FAPE if the IEP is, quote, reasonably calculated to enable the child to receive educational benefits. The petitioner in this case, Andrew F., a child, was diagnosed with autism when he was 2 years old. From preschool to fourth grade, Andrew attended school in the Douglas County School District, receiving an IEP each year. By the time Andrew was in fourth grade, however, his parents had become dissatisfied with his progress. They believed that Andrew's IEPs did not do enough to address his behavioral difficulties and, as a result, were able to set only modest academic goals. If the school did more to address Andrew's behavior, they reasoned, it would also be able to aim for more academic progress. When the school proposed a fifth-grade IEP that Andrew's parents considered no different than his past ones, they removed Andrew from public school and enrolled him at a private school that specializes in educating children with autism. Andrew's new school adopted strategies for addressing his behavior and added heft to his academic goals. His behavior improved, and he soon made the kind of academic progress that had eluded him in the past. Now, the IDEA entitles parents to reimbursement for private school tuition if their child did not receive a FAPE in public school. Andrew's parents sought reimbursement, but their claim was denied in an administrative proceeding, then denied in federal district court. The Court of Appeals affirmed that denial. The Court of Appeals read our decision in Rowley to say that, a child has received a FAPE as long as his IEP is calculated to confer, quote, some educational benefit, end quote. The Court explained that this standard is satisfied as long as the IEP is designed to enable the child to make progress that is, quote, merely more than de minimis, end quote. Our decision in Rowley and the text of the IDEA, however, point to a more demanding standard. To satisfy the FAPE requirement, a school must offer an IEP reasonably calculated to enable a child to make progress appropriate in light of the child's circumstances. Now, in saying that an IEP must be reasonably calculated to achieve its ends, we recognize that crafting an educational program for a child with a disability involves both the expert judgment of school officials and the input of the children's parents or guardians. A court reviewing an IEP must appreciate that the question is whether the IEP is reasonable, not whether the court regards it as ideal. It is clear that an IEP must aim for progress. After all, the basic function of an IEP is to set out a plan for pursuing academic and functional advancement for the child. A standard not focused on student progress would fail to remedy the pervasive academic stagnation experienced by disabled children that prompted Congress to act. Finally, the progress contemplated by the IEP must be appropriate in light of the child's circumstances. This reflects the focus on the individual child that we have seen throughout the IDEA, including in its basic command that a school offer instruction that is, in the words of the Act, specially designed to meet a child's unique needs through an individualized education program. Now, our decision in Rowley sheds light on what appropriate progress will look like in many cases. Although that opinion did not set out an overarching standard, it did say that for children receiving education in the regular classroom, an IEP should generally be, quote, reasonably calculated to enable the child to achieve passing marks and advance from grade to grade. That guidance is grounded in the text of the IDEA, in particular its provisions governing the IEP development process, which focus on the pursuit of, quote, progress in the general education curriculum. Rowley did not set out concrete guidance for the case of a child who is not fully integrated in the regular classroom. Such a child's IEP need not aim for grade-level advancement if that is not a realistic prospect. But that child's educational program must be appropriately ambitious in light of his circumstances, just as advancement from grade to grade is appropriately ambitious for most children in the regular classroom. The goals may differ, but every child should have the chance to meet challenging objectives. Now, whatever else may be said about this general standard, it is more demanding than the test applied by the court below. It cannot be that the IDEA generally aims for grade-level advancement for children who are fully integrated in the regular classroom, but tolerates barely more than de minimis progress for those who are not. Because the adequacy of any IEP turns on the unique circumstances of the child for whom it was crafted, we do not attempt to elaborate on what appropriate progress will look like from case to case. Courts should not mistake this absence of a bright-line rule for an invitation to override the judgments of educators with their own ideas of educational policy. But at the same time, we defer to school authorities based on their expertise and exercise of judgment. The procedures set out in the IDEA ensure that by the time a dispute about an IEP reaches court, parents and school representatives will have fully aired their respective views on the degree of progress the IEP should pursue. Accordingly, school authorities will have had an opportunity to bring their expertise and judgment to bear on areas of disagreement. At that point, a reviewing court may fairly expect those authorities to be able to cogently explain their decisions in a way that shows the IEP is reasonably calculated to enable the child to make progress appropriate in light of his circumstances. We vacate the judgment below and remand the case for further proceedings. Our decision is unanimous.